Accession number 12910, Reel 2.
It's Rimray, Reel 2. You were just telling me about the policing work you were doing at Ranley. Can you tell me about the character of the area? Was it entirely Arab?
Yes, in those days it was entirely Arab. I don't think there were any Jews there at all. It was a very large, flat area with watercourses, dried up, for the most part, dried up watercourses called wadis, interspersed with very prickly cactus hedges. Now, you have just asked me about gang robberies. Well, I do recall one raid, a Bedouin raid, which might come into the same category as a gang robbery. I'll try and remember, tell you how this occurred. I had just come off night duty and I was still in uniform. This was at about, I suppose, about 6 o'clock in the morning. And a galloping horseman came to the police station and said that a lot of Bedouin raiders had come to a village and were driving off the goats, camels, and anything they could find. These Bedouin were themselves mounted on camels, and obviously the police had to do something about it. Well, in those days, the Inspector General was RGB Spicer, Roy Spicer, and he was reorganizing the force, and one of his precepts was speed of turnout. If you have to turn out quickly, don't worry too much about uniform. The great thing is speed. Don't worry about putting on all your kit. Come as you are. So, we had a British inspector there who made a very quick plan. His name was Townsend, Inspector Townsend. We used to call him General Townsend after the General Townsend of Kuti Lamara in War One. So the general made his very quick plan, which was there would be two squads of mounted men to try to do a pincer movement. And they would be followed up across the wadi, across the flat ground towards this village by two tenderloads, Morris tenderloads, of foot police. I, in fact, had my own small pony. I wasn't a mounted man, but I didn't think my pony would be up to this particular thing. So I got in one of the tenders with the other policemen, the other footmen, and we followed up after the mounted men. Well, what happened was the Bedouin found themselves headed off by one of these mounted squads, and they came right up towards a big line of cactus, and there they halted. At the same time, on the other side of the cactus hedge, was another squad, the second squad of mounted men. And they both, for a time, they looked at each other across this cactus barrier, wondering what to do next. Well, then, the first squad came up behind the Bedouin, and there was a general scrimmage. Then my tender, full of the footmen, arrived on the scene, and there was a further scrimmage. In fact, there was a sort of general melee, and all sorts of things happened. Anyway, finally we managed to collect 15 rather shaggy-looking Bedouin, and we took them to the police station. There were a few casualties, but nothing very special. I think one Bedouin, in the general excitement, had shot off his own toe, and a few people had got very badly pricked by cactus, but generally speaking, it was a very enjoyable little scrimmage. And I think these Bedouin were taken before an Arab magistrate in Ramleh, and of course he was very conversant with the doctrine of the Bedouin raid, and he was very sympathetic towards these people. I think they got off with 6 weeks each.
He was extraordinarily lenient.
No, not if you were imbued with the idea of the Bedouin raid, because the Bedouin raid was the national sport of the Bedouin, and there's a good deal of documentation on this. General Sir John Glubb, who was in command of the Arab Legion for many years, he talks in his books about the Bedouin raid, and I think anybody who has been anywhere near Bedouin and their philosophy of the raid is probably sympathetic towards them.
I don't suppose the villagers who were plundered were sympathetic.
They weren't at all sympathetic, no. They didn't like it at all. They were fellaheen. They were the settled people, and in other words, people of no account in the eyes of the Bedouin.
But weren't the police supposed to protect those people?
I'm sorry?
Weren't the police supposed to protect the fellaheen?
Oh, yes, indeed, indeed. We did what we could to protect them by going and we got their cattle back and their camels back. And the only thing that we didn't do was to secure the sort of prosecution which would put these Bedouin away for any length of time.
So there were no Jews in the Ramleh area?
There might have been, in fact, I think there were two or three policemen who were Jewish. But apart from that, no. And they were simply there to do interpretation work, if necessary. But no, it was predominantly an Arab area.
Did the Arabs in the area or your Arab colleagues complain to you about the policy of the British government with regard to Jewish immigration into Palestine?
I never, at that stage, from any constables in Ramleh, I never heard anything of that sort at all, no. No. It was the policy of Roy Spicer, and it was put into effect, that British and Palestinian constables should work as much together as possible in order to learn their own, each other's philosophies and way of life. And so, whenever you were on, if you were on night patrol, it would be a Britisher and a Palestinian. And that was almost, as far as I was concerned, it was invariably an Arab constable. I don't think I ever went on patrol with a Jewish constable.
Why was that? Why was that?
Because it was an Arab area, and I think the Jewish constables were there on other work. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
How long were you at Ramleh for?
I was down there for, I think, about 10 months.
Any other important incidents that happened to you there that can be recounted?
I would have to remind myself by looking at a memorandum I've got.
Well, let's leave it for the moment and go on to your next posting.
I'd like to come back to Ramleh for a moment. There is a history of the Palestine police by Edward Horn called A Job Well Done. Edward Horn draws attention to postings to Ramleh. He says that Ramleh was regarded as an officer training station. a training of constables or potential officer material. Five of us, I think, went down to Ramleh, were posted from the depot down to Ramleh at the same time. I don't think we ever regarded ourselves as anything very special. I don't think we knew that we were regarded as potential officer material. We were aware of certain ribald comments made by a number of policemen about Ramleh boys being something rather special. But I don't think we were ever treated in any way as being anything other than ordinary rankers. In the event, there were five of us, I think, and in the event, two of us subsequently became commissioned in the Colonial Police Service. One was a man called Frank McAdam, who was killed on active service with the Arab Legion later on. And I was commissioned into the Gold Coast Police later on. But of the others, I think they all left of their own accord. In fact, I'm sure they did.
Now, you were telling me that after 10 months you left Ramleh for somewhere else.
Yes, I was transferred up to Jerusalem. There, I was once again. I was required for cricket, of all things, to play in the Force Cricket 11. And I was employed at police headquarters. I can't remember which job I was given at that particular time. I think for a time I was in the accounts department. Then I think I was in a general department. I can't remember. I can't recall quite what I was doing at the time. But if one was employed at headquarters or in any staff job, one was automatically assigned to what was called the striking force. That meant you were quartered at the depot at Mount Scopus, and if anything happened anywhere in Palestine which needed reinforcement, the striking force would go out to that particular place and would sit down in that place until whatever emergency was lifted.
Were they specially equipped?
We were equipped on each occasion when we went out. We had the long truncheon, and we had a metal shield, and we had the army steel helmet. Yes.
How big a force was it?
That would depend very much on men available. I suppose at the depot there might have been 30 or 40 men who were employed in various staff capacities, either at the depot itself, at police headquarters, or in some other staff job. I think we could probably muster about 30.
Did you ever have to go out as a fire brigade, as it were, yourself?
I think I must have gone out several times with them. The one that, of course, often one would... would not go into action at all. I can remember on two occasions we went down to the southern district where trouble of some kind was expected. I can't remember what it was now. And it simply entailed sitting around waiting in case one was needed. And on both occasions when I did this in the Southern District, we were not needed. So that was that. One simply had a slightly uncomfortable, frustrating time sitting around in a police billet, waiting. But there were two major things that did occur when I was in this striking force. King Faisal of Iraq died in Europe. His body was brought to Haifa by a British cruiser. A rumour had been spread round the Middle East that the British had poisoned Faisal, which was, I would think, totally and utterly untrue. The likelihood was that the rumour was spread by Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who was an inveterate enemy of the British. I can't say for certainty that this was the case, but it was generally believed to be the case. Faisal's body was brought to Haifa by the British cruiser. A very large number of reinforcements, including the depot striking force, were sent up to Haifa to reinforce the Haifa police. I was in that striking force, and we were posted to begin with to help convey the body from Haifa, the cruiser at the in the Haifa harbour, to the landing ground, the air landing ground, which was a distance probably of about a mile and a half, I can't remember. And it seemed as though almost the whole of the Middle East had gathered in Haifa, and they were very, very vociferous. There were constant Allah Akbars. There were undoubtedly, we British were highly unpopular, and it was a frightening time. In fact, there came a moment when I've never been so frightened in my life. We got the body as far as the aircraft. Immediately round the aircraft, there was a cordon to try to stop anybody interfering with the embarkation of the body onto the aircraft. Outside this police cordon, there was a platoon of Seaforth Highlanders, and their bayonets were fixed. They were under an officer. Further out, around the landing strip, there was a double cordon of police, of whom I was one, trying to keep back these hordes of people who were all trying to get onto the landing strip. Why were they trying to get onto the landing strip? To be as near as they could to Faisal's body. What they would propose to do with Faisal's body if they got to it, I don't know at all. But they were a milling, terrifying mass of people. They broke through the cordon near where I was, and we were all trampled underfoot. The mass of people went straight towards the plane. The cordon was quite useless. I was trampled underfoot. I was lying on the ground, and I was just struggling to my feet when suddenly back came this milling mass of people, but this time they were terrified out of their wits. What had happened was the officer in charge of the Seaforth, the platoon of Seaforth, had ordered what was a dummy bayonet charge. I think a few people got pricked, but anyway, it frightened the life out of them. And they went barging clean over us again. Once again, we were all trampled into the ground. I think there were a number of us hospital cases. I personally wasn't. I was pretty badly knocked about and bruised. But I didn't have to go to hospital. And so ended a pretty frightening day.
Did they just trample over you? Or
yes,
they
were like a herd of buffalo going clean over us.
But did they deliberately try to injure you?
Oh, no, they were just... All they wanted was to get near, first of all, near Faisal's body, and the first rush, the second rush coming away, they were terrified out of their lives of this bayonet charge.
But were they manifesting anti-British feeling?
The first time, there were these constant... Everybody, the whole thing was bedlam. And I think all of us were terrified. Very frightened indeed. And indeed, I think that we were lucky to get away with it.
Any other incidents like this that happened to you on standby?
One more. And that happened in October 33. And this was to do with Arab demonstrations against Jewish immigration. The overall policy of the Palestine government on the subject of Jewish immigration was obviously dictated by Whitehall. There were quotas for Jewish immigration, but there were two very dominant characters. One was a Jew, Dr. Weizmann, and the other was Hegemin il-Husseini for the Arabs. And it seemed to many of us in the police that in terms of the amount of pressure that was put on Whitehall through the High Commissioner by one or other of these two, that quotas of Jewish immigration either went up or down. In other words, it seemed to us that Whitehall was blowing hot and cold the whole time. Anyway, to come back to what happened, there was a big Arab demonstration in Jerusalem, in which I had nothing to do with that at all. I've forgotten why, but I wasn't called upon to go down with the striking force. Government had forbidden this demonstration, but the Arab higher committee, whoever they were, I can't remember what they were called now, insisted that they would hold this demonstration, and they did. And it was quite a tricky business, I believe. I believe there were casualties on both the police side and on the Arab side. But it was nothing like as bad as happened a fortnight later in Jaffa. Because having held this first demonstration in Jerusalem, the Arab Higher Committee said, all right, we're now going to hold another one down in Jaffa. Government said, no, you will not. The Arabs insisted they were going to do it. So we of the striking force, together with a lot of others, were drafted down to Jaffa. This was in October. I can't remember the date. October 33. And we were drawn up just ahead of the government building where there was a balcony. On the government building, there was the district commissioner, there was the district superintendent of police and the officer in command of a company, I believe, of the Ulster Rifles. In other words, the military local commander. The three of them were up there on the balcony. I can't tell you the name of the district commissioner. I've always thought it was a particular individual, but I've just been put right recently over that. It was somebody else. But whoever it was, he didn't come out of the business at all well. We were perhaps 80 and 90 British police in line right across the road. We had pickets on the rooftops, the flat rooftops, to stop or try to stop stones being pushed down on top of us. In point of fact, it wasn't successful. The pickets were, in the event, overrun. In front of us, we had 20 or 30 dismounted Bedouin of the police camel corps. They were supposed to act as a screen to keep the mob of people, who in the event were very thick, off us, giving us space in which to push forward against them. Behind us we had 20 mounted men, 20, 30 mounted men, I can't remember how many. The general plan was, if necessary, we would baton charge at the crowd in front, then on the blast of a whistle we would separate right and left, and the mounted men would come through and sweep the crowd away from the central square, the Jaffa Central Square. The whole of the morning, waiting until roughly about 12 o'clock, crowds had been collecting, very large crowds. It's always very difficult to assess the numbers of a crowd, but in the report later, various reports put the crowd at between 3,000 and 10,000. Well, if one gets a very mean, possibly 5,000, 6,000, that possibly would have been about right. I don't know. But they kept collecting. There was an awful lot of them, a serried, massed collection of people. And they were very, very angry. They had sticks and staves, iron bars, etc. I don't think there were any firearms. But they were very, very menacing indeed. At approximately, I think, 12 o'clock, I'm not sure what time, the timing, the leaders of the Arabs came out of the mosque, and they were inciting this vast crowd of people to attack us. What was wanted was the leaders wished to get into the government building and present a petition to the district commissioner.